I mean, I can't blame anybody because I've been the one that's been pushing, but I know that it started with a desire to, like, do things that one could sink one's teeth in. You know, everybody wanted to do the Mesillas Yesharim and then Murin Nevuchim and all kinds of Das Tvunas, whatever, all kinds of great ideas. And the fact that we settled on using Mikra as a mocker means something. It wasn't just a funny little thing. Well, what it means is that it's always easy to talk about all of these big things, but the fact is that the reality of the Chiburin and whatever trains a mind to be able to really get into the realities of how the Torah looks at things is always Mikra. There's just no way to avoid that. I mean, you see the disasters that take place in yeshivas because they don't take seriously the chiyuv of Talmud Torah that you're supposed to give a 30-year time to Mikra. And that means that it is, you know, it's like the Medrash says, the Bikiyas and Chov Talat Sforim is like the Takshidei HaKala. I think anybody that's done it, anybody that followed through the Tanakh Shirim, it's felt themselves changing in ways that just there's no way to duplicate by thinking about things. And in order to do that, it requires a level of loyalty to the Mikra. It's not like I just get the feeling everybody's looking through things in order to find grand issues. You know, it's like you're learning Mikra as if it's the Murin Nevuchim. And what we really need is to have absolute belief and commitment to allowing oneself to just wallow in Mikra. And it's just not happening. If you were wallowing in it, I'd be getting all kinds of silly questions out of those silly questions, very simple, simplistic questions. Out of those kind of questions, that's where the binyanim ultimately show up, not when you're going out to try to find something. And you've got to do that for yourselves, because otherwise we're not, I mean, first of all, I can't carry this whole thing on my own in this format. I mean, go back to the old Tanakh Shir, but this is meant to be really a joint project. And I just don't feel I'm getting that kind of wallowing. I'm getting thinking. I don't want thinking. I want learners of Mikra, that's all. That way we're able to come together. Let me do the thinking sometimes. I mean, that's part of what we wanted to do. But where's the data? Where's the raw material? Where's the love? Where's the unbelievable diyukim and dikdukim? And I mean, that's what it's all about. I really feel that you don't have enough interest in that. That's tremendous problems that people nowadays want the grand things without creating what this parak is all about, without creating the basic structures. Now here you see people, mamish, dedicating their lives, you know, picking up old stones and building them up one after the other, and that's obviously the Binyan Yerushalayim. I mean, you say, well, what good is all of this silly, you know, picking up old stones? I'm telling you, people who think this are doing the same thing that Sanvalata it's like, you know, what's the point of all of this? Let's have some, you know, these Yehudim Amalelim, you know. What are they thinking about all this old stuff in Ezra and Nehemiah? Come on, we've got all kinds of exciting things going on. I really think it's metaphorically, it's very funny, but it's metaphorically the problem that we're suffering from. And if we're going to rebuild the Chomot Yerushalayim in the deepest way, it's not a joke, the deepest problems that we have are that people have no chibur to the chomot of Torah. None whatsoever. It's all, you know, it's all secondary, tertiary, God knows how many levels down, to be able to digest pre-digested things one after the other without the willingness to experience what it takes to be able to get to that level of, you know, it's me already, of me avin shmua. I mean, that's what it takes. We end up chas v'shalom with our own ideas, without the chiburim, without the willingness to take out all the garbage and to start over again, and even to use those avanim srufot, to be able to build with them. I don't want to overstress the issues here, but these are really very distressing things for me, because I'm not getting from you, and I don't believe that you're getting from you, from your own learning, what it is that we needed to get you. Okay, so anyway, let's keep going here on Perek Shlishi. I think we have some wonderful overall things. I hope you listened to the previous YouTube so that we don't have to start again from where we were. And you remember the amazing structures and the way it was that Nehemiah is utilizing its tefillah, his mission statement, as such that everything is involved in that statement as he goes, and he's constantly in touch with the very things that motivated him initially and that gave him the sense that he would be able to translate the initial Pekida aspects of Ezra that were not going anywhere. He was able to do it by creating what he believed would ultimately become a tipping point, which would amazingly enable the rebuilding of the Am itself, starting with the expansion of Ezra's ideas into the Binyan HaMedina, the Medina being Yerushalayim HaMedina, that was connected to Machane Yisrael in the Midbar, which obviously was the way that it all started with us, with Klal Yisrael's Yetziah from Eretz Mitzrayim, and that would bring an interrelationship of the overall structure of the Am that had begun back in Ezra, but it just never coalesced. So even though we found at the time of Ezra, there are all these different groups went out to different cities, and there was Hityashvut, Hitnachluyot, there was no real relationship. There was no interconnection. There was no sense of establishing an inyan of changing pure Pekida and ideas into a living Am that, as we said, just seems to appear out of a black box. And since the only information that the Torah gives us about that black box is these dreams, very primitive, primitive things that go on in the time of Ezra, and the Torah insists that we share the type of primitive, raw feelings and raw thinking that was going on at the time, as we mentioned, that's the whole point of Ketuvim, is to be able to put oneself into the mind of those writers and to be able to see how it was that they experienced reality. And indeed, we really feel the primitiveness of the way in which they express themselves and in the way in which they see things and in the way that things have been ripped down and the actual structures are primitives. And everybody is indeed making fun of them and pointing out as to how meaningless what they're doing is, and trying to break their spirits by bringing out the meaninglessness and by making them doubt the purity of their own intentions and by trying to read politics into the motivations of Nehemiah himself and the people that are with him. There's this profound psychological warfare, which in next parak already becomes plans for physical warfare. This is what we are up against all the time. It's what Klal Yisrael is up against, and the achievement that he makes here is done with a tremendous amount of thinking, and yet it takes a lot of rereading and rereading until we understand what type of sophisticated thought lies behind these primitive expressions. I think there's some patterns that come out here that make an unbelievable impact. One is that if you notice, there are 42 different pieces in the Binyan of Yerushalayim, and I find it very difficult to believe that isn't connected to the building of the Machane Yisrael and the Masos and the Midbar and the Arei Halavim, which turn out to be the same as the 42. It must be that he literally had that in mind, in the sense of rebuilding those masa'ot. And each one of the pieces that he does here is another piece of a puzzle that's meant to fit together, just as those Oreal Avim, or just as the, which of course is the main issue in Nehemia, what happened to Levium. And that itself points to some tremendous chashiva, which if you consider the way that he also does not do what you would think, and that is to give it sort of like, you know, in the United States, they give pieces of road out to different groups of people, and those people accept upon themselves to be mechazek, literally the same lashon that we use over here, the chizuk ha-chomot, in different places. So they're mitchazek, the chalokim of the highway, and they put up a little sign, you know, this part of the road is being maintained by, and they, you know, whatever it is, the local agricultural thing, whatever it is. It's very cute as you go along. And you would think that that would be what he would do. And on the surface, when you read it through quickly, you might actually think that that's what it is. And then you realize the weirdest thing, that these groups are given multiple locations. And it's really strange. Well, what is the point of being given a multiple location? There's so many of them. Midasheni. So I have to remember that way back at the beginning of the story, you know, it might be item number 4 is repeated again in item number 32, and so on. So that the same people that built one section of the wall are like, all of a sudden they're involved in a completely different section of the Choman, a totally different part of the city. The amazing chokhmah that is involved in that, in the idea that there should not be this sense that there's a piece of this that is specifically mine, but that in having a piece that's mine, it's pieces of the whole thing that I take responsibility for. And the mail of my efforts, instead of seeing them as being dissipated over a larger area, Anurabha, that itself gave them the sense that I have a piece of the action in Yerushalayim, not a piece of the action in this part that is connected by Beiti, as we find in certain places. Another thing that was remarkably powerful, meaningful, was the fact that he involves so many different cities. I mean, when he talks about Beit Tzur, and he talks about Zanoah, and Givon, and Yericho, and the Kikar HaYarden, and Mitzpah, and Keilah, Tekoa. I mean, these are all places that are scattered about, and places that had these people had settled in, and we never hear from them again, back in Ezra. And all of a sudden, they become responsible for the building of Yerushalayim itself. So it's not just a local effort. The building of Yerushalayim becomes the effort of the Am as a whole, who are going to be leaving. Get that wire out from in front of your face, Gavi. That's going to be part. It's going to be part of their sense of the expanded Yerushalayim, as we saw that's the whole meaning, is that Yerushalayim sheds now its light on the entirety of what is happening. Because of that, it's just tremendously powerful to relive these moments. Even I sent you out that map, and it's really a very beautiful map from this new Sefer on Yirmiyahu, the color-coded map. I hope you were able to print it up, or at least to full screen it, and you get a better sense of what's happening. And again, it's an amazing thing that it really, I mean, what I said before is metaphorical, but I mean, like, what is this Yerushalayim business? You know, like, how is it that people would relate so deeply to, you know, like old stones, you know? Little pieces of wall that, you know, become like, wow, here is the place where Hezekiah built this, and Nehemiah built this, and here is where they dug out the water channels. It's like, okay, you know, it's nice, but there's this amazing sense of touching these very, very profound mikorot in identity, not because of its archaeological and historical elements, but because of it, somehow it's yisodot. There's something about it that makes us, oh no, Hey, Kelsa can't. But that itself is what it is that Tanakh gives us bichlal. And so it's true that we cannot necessarily, or it's not necessarily worth our time right now in this format, to be able to trace all of these names and where they came initially in Sefer Ezra, and where they're mentioned in Divrei Hayomim, and where they become part of the Mishmarot HaKunah, where they're part of the Mishmarot of the Leviya, and where they're mentioned in the Gemara in terms of the Korban HaEtzim, and all of the various things that throughout the Deres keep referring back to names like these. And it's true, maybe it's not worth it for us to do all of that, but nonetheless, there's clearly a building up within us of the actual experiences of identity, which is just a remarkable thing, which anybody that goes through Tanakh, just keep going one parak a day. You find your entire sense of who you are, your appreciation of the language of Lashon HaKodesh, of, I don't know, somehow or other, these names, they start to reverberate in your brain, and you become part of this unbelievable project over thousands of years, and it becomes like yesterday's events to you. The places are all so alive that there's no way that anybody gets these feelings unless they actually put in that kind of work. So it's magic somehow. I can't explain it, but I know that this is what it does. So, yeah, but put your, then take yourself off of mute if you want to add. Oh, okay. All right, so then speak, because I think they can hear you through here.
I just wanted to share my sister, who actually Nati was teaching last year, because she started joining the Chidona Tanakh. It's amazing, just from learning small ways for the Chidona Tanakh, she went from illiterate, who basically was like the standard for the rest of the school, to being able to read any, or basically practically any pasuk, being able to understand it at first glance, being able to go through Rashi just by going over the pasukim several times. It's like she actually is capable of understanding Lashon HaKodesh, which she had no sense of before. And it's like,
okay, but are you talking only about the language, or are you talking about the almost culture of the language? It's like what a language really brings. I mean, that's the deeper point, is that it begins to be real to you. It's more than, okay, any language if you use, you get to,
right,
you know, obviously you get to speak it. Yeah. But the idea over here is that the power of Lashon HaKodesh to reconstruct the modalities of thinking and experiencing are far deeper because of the construction of Lashon HaKodesh. Remember that it's not, it's an extremely limited language in terms of its one-to-one word interpretation. It's a very limited vocabulary. It deals always with Shorashim. And when you deal with Shorashim and begin to see how they interrelate in a more complex world, then it takes you straight down to the bottom. That's the magic of it. You don't get that in languages with one-to-one correlations. All right, so anyway, last time that we met, we spoke about the way in which the introduction of the response of Sanballat and what it was that clearly Nehemiah was doing purposefully, and his response to them when they first accuse him of doing all of this, not for any of the reasons that supposedly he's giving publicly, which is about these great dreams and great plans and great hatzlacha that the great Lord has given him, and all of this is in order to achieve the Ashras HaShechina. What we know you're doing is actually, that's, we saw amazingly, was the deepest bizoyan that he felt that somebody could say, is to take the things that to him were most valuable, most real, and to turn them into attempts to gain political leverage while cynically using people's feelings about their Aveda Shamayim. And you can't be more devastatingly mevazeh somebody. It's very similar to the way that the goyim were mevazeh Klal Yisrael because of the sexual references in the Beis HaMikdash And when Bavaza them at the saying that those deep experiences that they had about the physicality of their closeness and intimacy to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avodas Hashem should be translated into something that is cheap and low class. This is Mamish Kibat Weir Vata. And this is exactly what they attempted to do over here. Let's take this individual and turn him into nothing but a politician, which of course, I mean, this is what happens. The moment that anybody is chayshiv, that a rav is a politician, or a rashiv is a politician, that person totally loses any chashivas in people's minds. His words are meaningless. And it's because of this that we live in a period in which there's a complete sense of bizoyan to anything that someone who would have connection to some political value in what his statement is, that he should be looked up to by a particular group and so on, is mamash left out of the house by tens of thousands of people who otherwise would be able to learn something or another from Divrei Torah that come their way. And this is exactly what they went to do. And so immediately after the response, we recognize that we should start actually Paragimo, which is a Goyesha idea, from the Parsha that begins with Vayishma San Valata for Ani. And because of this, the Vayokom El Yashiva Kohen HaGadol, which the Goyim take as the beginning of the next chapter, is actually a response, as we understood it, to what it was that Ezra did when he refused to even address what they were saying, didn't make any comment at all about the political ramifications. Oh God, I'm missing my rebuttal. About the political ramifications, and all he did was respond to the fact that Yerushalayim is about eternity. Yerushalayim is about Zikari. And that people who don't have that sense of being able to be part of that book that's written about Yerushalayim have no room to be part of Yerushalayim, ever. And immediately upon hearing this, we find that there's a tikkuma, vayokom, we compared this before to Rus, at the time of by Naomi, where it says over there, when you touch bottom and you realize that either this is the moment of tikkuma, when you stand up for yourself and you really understand what it means to be in a matzav of geula, then vayokom, specifically El Yashiv. So the Kohen HaGadol El Yashiv is exactly what the Esek is here of Nehemiah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should restore, should rebuild. So he's the Kohen HaGadol, the Achav HaKohanim, they get up. And without further ado, vayivnu et Shaar HaTzon, they build a Shaar HaTzon, and Hema Kichuhu, which is many different ways to understand. Hema Kichuhu, so Rashi compares this to the dinim of Kiddusha Seir, that the Gemara discusses about whether later on, as we mentioned, there's going to be the whole process of the Shtei Todot, of the procession around the city. There's a machlokas to the Gemara, but that was done as a Seicher, that was done as an actual, because Kiddush Rishonah was Batla, and they needed to literally be Mekadesh. So, I mean, because we're talking about the Kohanim, and the Shaar HaTzon undoubtedly is the Mokum of the Akrovos and Karbonos, where they would bring the Karbonos in, and that's why it was specifically the Kohen Gadol and Echav HaKohanim who took responsibility for that. So it could very well be that the meaning of Kichua in this sense is Kichua to make it part, the inside of the Shaar, which generally wasn't part of the Kedusha Sa'ir. They actually brought Kedusha to that Shaar, and they actually put up the doors to it. You want to go in and see whether, if they need us for a minute, I'll come in.
Yeah,
just take a look. So which leads us, and we're going to see there's something of a pattern, that the Sha'arim were indeed the centerpieces. That is, they started with the Shaar, and then they expanded. They would expand in multi-direction expansion. Since that's true, and we find sometimes that there's not a retzef. In other words, we stop, everyone is al-yado, until we get to a Shaar. When we get to a Shaar, then suddenly we rebuild the Shaar, and we start again. So that means that there was a vision of the Shaarei Yerushalayim, And then the parts that would be mechubar would extend outward from the shavim. Because of that, some learned that the meaning of hema kichuhu is the simple meaning of kichu, which is they prepared it for its expansion. You say, okay, now vichar is ready. Now to either direction you can move on. So you can go in one direction to Migdal HaMeah. Yes?
You're still missing one person.
It's your call. Your call. So in one direction they go to Migdal HaMeah, and then in the other direction they can go to Migdal Hananel, which means that the entire area from the Shaar HaTzon until the Migdalot were considered to be Mituka. Now it's not clear by them, it's not clear exactly. Take a look at the map. I mean, there's the Ashara where Migdal Hananel is, which you see over there all the way on the northern side of the part of the city which was essentially Arabayat at the time. It's not clear exactly where the Shaar HaTzon was, but there is a remes to the Sha'arim, not to the Sha'arim, but rather to the Migdalim, because the Migdalim left greater piles of stones in some places. Okay, so we get some sense of that. But essentially, what we're talking about over here, if you take a look at the map, we're talking about a very small city, which is half Beit HaMikdash, essentially, half the Har HaBayit, although the Har HaBayit that is pictured here is the Har HaBayit that was vastly expanded in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, from Ordos and so on. But that's what we call the Har HaBayit, that the edge of that area is essentially for us still available as the what we call, you know, the Kotel HaMa'aravi, which is very, very far from the Beit HaMikdash, as you can see over here. But okay, in any event, the other part of the city was that very small piece, which today is not even part of what people identify as Yerushalayim, the old city of Yerushalayim, because it's the area that, if you see there, is the pink area of Ir David. Yes?
Still not.
Okay. Is the pink area of Ir David here in the map. That area, which is now actually, I mean, now it's becoming rebuilt, and people are settling there and so on, but mostly, unfortunately, it's Arabs stole all of those homes from the Taimanim, who had built beautiful, rebuilt that area, which most of it is what was called Silvan. And the Arabs in the riots of 29, they stole all of those homes, of course, which now, you know, naturally that belongs to the Arabs, can't get anything back. But gradually, there was an amuta that was made that is settling that whole area that's called Ir David and rebuilding it and finding all of the Rumazim in it. That was the essential city at the time of David HaMelech. The extensions that were made much later, which was from the time essentially of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, those extensions also only cover a small part of what we now call the old city of Yerushalayim. Most of the what's called today the Rova Yehudi, the center part of the Rova Yehudi, was included in that part of Chizkiyahu. And that's the wall that you actually see where they dug out. That wall is that little piece you see in the map, is the dark piece of wall. That is the piece that extends right after the Kikar in the old city, which was, some say indeed, is the Choma Rechava that we see Nehemiah refers to before, which was very, very wide and has been obviously strengthened. Okay, but anyway, that's just to get a little bit of a sense of what's happening. So these Kohanim were the first to begin, the Al Yado, and then continuing one to the next, as Rashi points out, so each one, you know, in modern terms, what they do, it's very interesting that this has a tremendous impact psychologically in modern terms. People hold hands. They'll hold hands around something, you know, and make that hand-holding a tremendously emotional sense of what they've invested in the thing. The stress of Al Yado, despite the fact that, of course, it has the meaning of the Allah of Matem Menashe and so on, as Rashi points out, but it also means literally holding hands. In other words, it's each piece, the person felt that they were holding the hands of the person next to them. And that gives you a sense, using this word again and again and again, gives you a sense of the tremendous power of the joint effort, and people coming from all around and suddenly dancing around the city, so to speak, holding hands, which they try to do on Yom Yerushalayim, to actually hold hands. Sometimes there's an attempt to do that. And to show the kesher to Yerushalayim and the way that the Am Yisrael was misaved Yerushalayim. So here too, the whole thing was built al yado, so to speak. Al yado bonu anshe Yerecho. So this here, we know in the Gemara that from Yericho, indeed, there was a tremendous kibbutz, because that was where the Mishmarot used to hang out around Yericho. And from there, they would send up the supplies and people and exchange powers from Yericho up to Yerushalayim. And of course, you remember that sometimes the Mishnah talks about the relationship of Yericho. So whether it's the Izim Shiva Yericho, they used to sneeze from the Reach HaKtoret, or that you didn't need to use any kind of spices because of the Keteres, so that you could hear the sounds of Gvini Cruz and so on. Clearly, the next piece that's Bechorba to the Kayanim, for whatever reason this is, and this is the vision that we find throughout the Deres, the second base of Mikdash, Anshi, Arecho, indeed, were themselves the ones that were connected to the first part of the binyan, next to the Kohen Agadol, the Al Yado, Bana Zakur ben Imri. So this was the, we saw that back in Divrei Hayomim, that some of the families that had settled Yerushalayim were from Peretz ben Yehuda, and that is mentioned there. Time to go. Okay, anyway, gentlemen, fine. It's a nice beginning, I hope. I hope that we will be matzliach to have better contacts, better times, some type of better medium, Bezrat Hashem. So I'll see you. Please try to send me in your aitzes.